Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN Weekly for Saturday, March 9th, 2024. And our top story today, Federal Reserve rate cuts. Hey, they're coming. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Jane King joins us from the NASDAQ. And Stuart Hoffman is a senior economic advisor with PNC Financial Services. Jane, always great to see you. And Stu, welcome to the program this morning.
Great to be with you.
Likewise.
Yeah, this is a fun one. And here we're on the cusp of the end of the recent State of the Union address. But Jane, the markets, they are just rolling. I guess Jerome Powell had some voodoo and he gave some good comments.
The bulls just keep running, right? I mean, well, he mentioned maybe a rate cut. Perhaps if inflation goes down, I didn't actually think what he said was all that bullish or at least all that surprising, but markets felt comfortable with it and we just continue to march higher.
It's unbelievable, Stu, and I want to welcome you formally to the program. Really privileged to have you in addition to Jane. Job numbers out, employment numbers out. I want to get your reaction to what Jane said in your own analysis.
Yeah, as you said, Powell and Jane said, you know, I think Powell maybe tilted a little, and that's what the market liked. He's been saying that the Fed, they've all been saying they need to have greater confidence that inflation's coming down. And he actually said yesterday, a little bit different than he said on Wednesday, is he said something to the effect that we're getting closer to having that confidence. So that was sort of a tilt in the sense that we're not that far away. And then the jobs report that we got, I think it's soft landing with a capital S. The hours worked that were down in January, which I think was more of a weather report than an economic report, came right back up. The unemployment rate ticked up a little. That makes me a little nervous. But wages, which showed a pretty big increase in January, got knocked down a little, and then the February was much lower. So if Powell was saying yesterday, I feel like we're getting a little closer. I think the jobs report today and the numbers, the unemployment, the wages, you know, is pushed the Powell and the Fed, you know, that one quarter of an inch or one eighth of an inch closer to that greater confidence that they need to have to start cutting rates.
Yeah. Wouldn't you like to be, I say this to Jane all the time, but Stu, wouldn't you like to be a fly on the wall in that meeting? I mean, forgetting just the press, just to have the debate and the conversation that's going on, it must be amazing. But Stu, I want to ask you, and then I'll go to Jane to kind of close out the segment. Consumer debt continues to be high. Consumers, by all accounts, are struggling on some of these prices. So I get that inflation has come down maybe in some areas, but where it counts for some consumers, you know, in food prices, restaurant prices, gasoline prices maybe tick back up. What's your reaction to what consumers are feeling in addition to what Jerome Powell is saying? Excuse me.
Well, I know what you said about consumer debt being high, but what people don't remember is that income is higher. So when I look at consumer debt, it should be a ratio. You should look at the debt relative to the income or the debt services economist. How much do you have to pay every month to pay your mortgage or pay your credit cards? And with rates lower, and a lot of people locked in lower rates, certainly on mortgages, I think the hype about high debt for the consumer is overdone. Yes, delinquencies are starting to rise on some auto loans and some credit card loans, although from very low levels. And of course, now student loans, you have to make payments on them. But I look at house prices for those who are homeowners, never been higher. Jane's stock market, never been higher. So I wouldn't count out the American consumer. I mean, we had a weak retail sales number in January. Again, I think that was more a weather report. Next week, we're going to get retail sales for February. I expect they're going to more than offset the decline. And the little bit of evidence we already have on that is we did get new auto sales for the month of February. That came out, I guess, a couple of days ago. They were down in January. Again, too cold to go to the dealer. They were right back up in February, which is kind of a leading edge of what I think will be a strong February retail sales report. So that's the most recent numbers, but We have a little earlier Easter. I'm betting on the American consumer. They got jobs. They got income. Their confidence is coming back. And I'm not looking for, you know, a super strong consumer, but certainly the kind of consumer that delivers that so-called soft landing, 2% GDP growth, 2% consumer spending growth. And you know, the death of the consumer is greatly exaggerated, to semi-quote Mark Twain.
I was going to say, you're bringing Mark Twain into this. Jane, I want to get your reaction. First of all, Stu said it's your stock market, and so I think you would love to be over the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange. So first, your reaction to that, but also to Stu's comments about jobs report and the bullishness that I think we all feel, regardless of this consumer debt popping up.
Well, the 3.9% unemployment does give the Fed a little more wiggle room, a little more flexibility in terms of perhaps cutting rates. So the labor market not as tight. So that could be good. The only thing I'll throw out here, a little bit of cautionary note, revised lower again in December and January. In fact, a total 167,000 fewer jobs added than what we had originally thought. And when you dig in and you look at the jobs that were added in February, healthcare, government, 52,000. Retail, we also saw leisure and hospitality, social assistance, warehousing. Factories lost jobs, so manufacturing is still struggling.
Yeah, and Stu, I'll close it out with you, and I guess I'll ask is, how do we get the government to report the numbers and report them accurately so they don't revise down the numbers? I mean, I guess that's the bane of an economist's existence, is that there's always going to be revision.
And the bane of a statistician. As Jane said, they did revise January and December. I would point out that the three-month moving average, one way to just deal with inevitable downward or upward revisions, because the government gets not complete data, they get more information. So I often think that the January number today is a better number than they initially told us. And a month from now, the revised February number will be better. But the average of the last 3 months that Chairman Powell talks about all the time is, even with the downward revisions and a little bigger than expected February, 265,000 a month. That's the way to deal with the inevitable revisions, not just in jobs, but all kinds of economic data, because it's only as good as the statistics. It's only as good as people, you know, answering the surveys. And it's the reason I always average out at least 3 months. And I expect that initial data here get revised a little. But on the other hand, if you average over 3 or even 6 months, then you got a true picture of the underlying trend. And 265,000 jobs a month for the last 3 months is a strong report.
It is. It is. Well, Jane King, always great to see you. And Stuart Hoffman, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate having you both on the program. We look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Thanks, Jane and Stu. Great to see you. Thanks for sharing your perspective. And when we come back, we take a look back at some of our best segments of the week. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN Weekly. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Welcome back. Well, it was another great week of shows with great topics and, of course, always great guests. We kicked off the week discussing whether ETFs will drive mutual funds extinct. Let's take a look.
But let me give you the longer answer as well. So sure. First of all, just to clarify, so we're on the same point, we're talking here about index funds. So index ETFs and index open-end mutual funds. This is not a story about active versus passive. This is really just a story about the wrapper being an ETF as compared to an open-end mutual fund and the underlying portfolio being whatever index you want to invest in. And so the key idea is that of course, a lot of people in the industry will tell you that the average investor is best served by investing in a diversified portfolio of securities, such as a diversified benchmark index. And now the problem is that generally investors cannot directly access these benchmark indices, such as the S&P 500, the Bloomberg Aggregate Bond Index, but they have to rely on investment funds to gain their desired index exposure. And so here investors generally have the choice between an ETF and a mutual fund wrapper to access this index exposure. And so now the question I'm focused on in my research is, does it matter whether investors invest in an index through an ETF or an open-end mutual fund? That's exactly correct. So I'm trying to really dispute this idea that ETFs will always provide you with more intraday liquidity just because they're traded on exchange just like stocks. And so the idea is as follows. The key feature behind ETFs is that you trade them on exchange just like stocks. So when you put in your buy or sell order, you would trade at the current prevailing market price. And so on average, this market price tends to be close to the underlying fund net asset value, which is really the fundamental value.